Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
The Royals are in a free fall, and what's worse, this looks real. The bullpen is a mess. The Royals have the worst infield defense in all of baseball, and they just got three guys kicked out of a game for arguing a correct call. In short, the Royals have taken their eye off the ball. We discuss how they can fix it, maybe. A quarterback taken in the draft last weekend should be living his dream come true, but tragedy strikes his family again. Former Texas Signal caller Sam Ellinger has had a lifetime of loss before he's even started his adult life. I penned a couple of letters to the Kansas City Star and the bigwigs at the Shawnee Mission School District and Shawnee Mission North after they changed the name of my high school's mascot from Indians to Bison. I'm going full liberal on them. We share the letters with you, and I'll let you decide if I'd make a good liberal activist. I think I would. Why are the Democrats so concerned about the election audit taking place in Arizona? They told us the result was legit and there's nothing to see here. Now apparently Joe Biden wants to send the Department of Justice in to try to shut it down. What's going on? That doesn't smell right at all, does it? A CNN anchor sees his ratings go up while he's on vacation. I've never heard of that one. And if you have one certain easy-to-spot physical trait, researchers say you're twice as likely to have a hard time with COVID. That's all ahead on KKHI, brought to you by Elite Automation, designing and installing intelligent building systems. Two branches of Elite Automation. They will build for you a custom-fit control system for your HVAC that's going to save you big money. It's high-tech. It specifies room-to-room, door-by-door, and it will save you money a lot. If you mention KKHI, they're going to provide you 12 months cloud hosting free of charge as well. Or you can ask them to just be a consultant to what you're doing. They'll come in basically free of charge, help you consult with what you already have, and when they tell you how to operate it, which times of day, where you're losing money, and you save money, you share what you save with them. That's all. Everybody wins. Online at EliteAutomate.com. Roberts Robinson, Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs. Customers at Roberts Robinson say, we just make it easy. You can ask for Mike right there on the showroom floor or Tim Trader. He's the general sales manager. He's there each weekend. If you're out car buying this weekend, go check it out at Roberts Robinson. They have a great selection of Buick SUVs right now. Experience the new Buick. Cut rate prices too, an exceptional service on those. They've got some trucks in stock as well. Sierra and Silverado from GMC and Chevy. Find new roads and do business with someone you know and trust. And you can trust these folks because they're like us. Online at robertsrobinson.com. Doesn't matter where you are. They'll ship the car right to you or drive it to you. If you're within a couple hundred miles, they'll just drive it to you. If not, they can ship it to you anywhere in the country. Get your next GM truck, SUV, or car from the folks that you know and trust. Mike Robinson and his team at robertsrobinson.com. And bstock.net, this week only, it's the earpiece bonanza. Buy any Samsung TV, and get the Samsung Galaxy Buds free, or buy any iPad or MacBook at bstock.net, and you'll get the AirPods free. That's available online or in the store at 14680 South Flaming Road in Olathe. It's the old Toys R Us building. It's never crowded. It's a big warehouse for their online business. But if you see their storefront, it is a true outlet. I mean, their warehouse and business operations are all right there. They set up a little storefront in the front. It's an outlet store. It's no frills. It's not crowded. You're going to love it. You just save huge on anything electronics at bstock.net. All right, the Royals are free-falling, baby, and somehow it looks real to me. We're going to talk about how they can fix it, maybe, on KKHI. Hit it!
Back 9 Development is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, online at back9development.com.
The hard part of doing sports radio in Kansas City has always been, at least in my career, the 3 or 4 months of summer where the Royals are the main story in and around this fine city and have provided very little for so long for so many fans other than just their loyalty to the game and the loyalty to their team. You find little moments like getting excited that Brady Singer showed emotion while getting kicked out of a game after being taken out of a game by a backup manager. And you talk about that and you forget that they lost and you were entertained by it and you enjoy it. And you think about what may be somewhere down the road with Brady Singer. So I knew when I started the podcast that there was no way we would get to summertime and I would be able to just daily come on here and talk about the Royals and stimulate anyone to continually listen to a podcast. That it had to be something much broader than that. Many more items, many other things on the agenda, which is why we call it Sports, Politics, and Life. And we've led with a lot of politics the last few days, but the Royals are in a free fall that requires them to be at the front of this podcast. And I will recognize and admit right now that if the Royals don't show something better than what they've shown the last week, we won't be doing the Royals consistently throughout the summer. We'll do some of it where it applies. We'll talk about individual players as they make their debuts and things of that nature. Stories, if you will. Issues that the Royals have. But the podcast was never really designed to be some sort of a daily Royals report or daily sports report. It's about things going on in sports and in the world and things that matter to us, that if you hear this podcast a day later, it will still make sense. It's not last night's box score. It's not necessarily tonight's pitching matchup, things like that. So that's sort of where the thing began in the way that I look at things like a Royals season and know that I cannot do this every day. But we're going to do this today and we're going to go in depth on the Royals because what's happening right now and the mess that they are in is one of the quickest turnarounds we've ever seen. While we did spend some time here talking about the Royals were throwing, I used to say the Royals were throwing the ball all over the yard. I didn't know where it was going. You know, their Salvador Perez is carrying them on his back, and he did that for a 10-day period where he was like solely responsible for 5 wins, one player. And we watched the Royals. We saw things we liked. We love the way Danny Duffy started the season. We were encouraged by the bullpen that they had so many games in a row where they had not given up runs and they were holding leads and doing nice things and giving the Royals the opportunity to come from behind, which they did early on. The Royals got behind 4, 5, 6 runs a couple times this year and came from behind and won games. And we watched it and it was exciting. We talked about how the players like playing with each other. They seem to, you know, really feed off one another, and that can be a very powerful thing in sports, and you can gain momentum. But momentum can also go in the opposite direction, and that's what's happening to this team right now, and the flaws are really sticking out. The things that were weaknesses for the Royals while they were winning are things that are absolutely killing the Royals right now. The bullpen is a terrible weakness. We just witnessed a 4-game sweep by the Cleveland Indians that, to be perfectly honest, if we're just being honest about what the Royals are, this was like the Indians being the 2015 or 14 Royals playing against Cleveland those years. It was the teams in reverse. It didn't matter what the score of the game was. The starting pitchers would come out in the 5th inning or 6th inning, and when the starting pitchers come out, Cleveland would win the game. That's all this was. Major League Baseball has turned into a bullpen game. The Royals know this. The Royals were on the forefront of this, and it led to winning a World Series. We had a great time, and it was phenomenal, and it was so great because the Royals could be a run down after 5 innings, and you'd go, well, we got them now. The Royals didn't have great starting pitching when they won the World Series. It was okay. They had to go out and get Johnny Cueto and try to patch that up. But the bullpen was phenomenal. And we just watched a team with a ridiculous bullpen come in here to Kansas City and take 4 games from the Royals that you knew they just weren't going to win. Now they're going to go up against a White Sox team that's going to throw 2 starting pitchers Friday and Saturday. It's a 5-game losing streak. It will be a shocker if the Royals win Friday or Saturday. Carlos Rodon is coming in to pitch against Brad Keller, who's been a disaster. That's the Friday night game. Rodon has a 0.72 with a no-hitter this year. On Saturday, the Royals trot out Daniel Lynch in his second start ever against Lance Lynn, who already has a complete game shutout against the Royals this year and a 1.82 earned run average. This is bad, and it's not going to get much better. The Royals need to rethink if this is about this year, and I don't know that it is. Okay, I don't know what the Royals are thinking internally. It's hard to tell. It was clearly tempting, and it looked like, hey, we're in. We're 7 games over 500. We have the best record in baseball. We're all in. Lynch is a great arm. Let's get him up here. Let's see if we can solidify some of the pitching. They knew they had some problems in the bullpen. I think they thought Junis would fix that. Junis clearly is better as a starter than as a reliever. But the Royals are clearly, they look to me anyway, like they're clearly one of these teams that needs an opener to pitch. That maybe you put Brents out there for the first inning or the first and second inning. You put, you know, Brents and Barlow or something, the first couple innings, and then you bring in Danny Duffy And Duffy can go 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 innings into the eighth by pitching six or into the sixth inning. And then you bring in Josh Staumont to close out the game. The Royals don't have any defined roles. What we know about Major League Baseball is it's become a bullpen game. You love to have great starting pitching. You do. And if you're dominant, and Rodon may be dominant on Friday night, my suspicion is Keller will give up 4 or 5 runs. The Royals won't score off Rodon. And it'll be 4 or 5 to nothing or 4 or 5 to 1 in the fourth or fifth inning. And the Royals are in real trouble. And even if the Royals bullpen at that point is better than the White Sox, it won't make any difference. So you can win with starting pitching. And I love some of the things that I've seen with the Royals starting pitching. The question is, are the Royals using it properly? Does it do any good for Danny Duffy to have the year that he's having to go out there and pitch 5 2/3 or whatever, or get into the sixth inning or maybe one out in the seventh and turn it over to a bullpen that's not going to hold a 1 or 2 run lead? I strongly, and I've said this from the first week of the season, this is not going to last with Greg Holland and Wade Davis. It's not. And Irvin Santana. These three guys don't belong in the big leagues. Brady Singer's up. He was terrific last year. We love the kid. Daniel Lynch looks like he's going to stay in the rotation. They brought up Bubich last week. Jackson Coar, in his first game in AAA in Omaha, was dazzling, sensational. 9 strikeouts in 5-plus innings. This is where it is. It's Staumont. It's Barlow. Maybe it's Brents. We know some of the guys in the bullpen. It's pretty much anybody under the age of 28 at this point for the Royals. That's what it is, and that's what this season is about. And so I'm not complaining about Daniel Lynch facing Lance Lynn on Saturday. It's a mismatch. It is. But Lynch could go out and throw a gem. He pitched very well the other night. He should have only given up 1 run in 5 innings, basically. But that is not what happened for him. And if he went out and did that tomorrow, the Royals would be probably down 1-0 or 1-1 or whatever it may be. It won't win the game. It's impossible to see. And listen, I'm not complaining about Daniel Lynch starting. I love this. And I think he needs to be tested against a good starter. He needs to know now, going into his second major league start, I'm going up against a stud that shut my team out when I wasn't even here. I wasn't even sitting on the bench watching, and this guy shut him out a few weeks ago. I got to do my job tonight. That adds some pressure. Maybe that's what this season is about. Maybe we got too excited. I think I probably did. Maybe we got too excited that the Royals had Danny Duffy pitching well, Salvador Perez getting big hits in the clutch. Did you know the Royals have the worst infield defense in all of Major League Baseball? You know, I watch with my eyes, and I don't like reciting stats. It's not my favorite. I don't think that's for audio programs, for the spoken word. I just don't think that, you know, I was listening on the way home from my wife's parents' house last night to a local radio show where all they were doing, literally, there were 3 people on the air at once, and all they were doing was reading stats of former baseball players off their computer screens. And because Pujols had been released. So they started reading Pujols stats. Then it led to this player. Then it led to that player. Then to this player. And it's just one stat after another. Once that computer screen is up and you're staring at it and your microphone is open, that's all you do is read stats. And I've never thought that's good radio or good podcasting or anything. And I've watched the Royals, and you've heard me say multiple times on this podcast that the Royals are just throwing the ball all over the place. They first week of the season, they threw it everywhere. Then they started kicking it everywhere. Nicky Lopez, this far into the season, has done a nice job filling in. For a while, he was the best number 9 hitter in baseball. He's been okay. He is defensively the worst shortstop in baseball this far. He's not a shortstop. He's a backup shortstop. Fortunately for the Royals, they're loaded with shortstops. Adalberto Mondesi is not far away. A little rehab assignment. He should be up. That will be a massive improvement for the Royals. Bobby Witt Jr. can play shortstop. He's the best prospect in the organization. If you put Bobby Witt Jr. at third and you have Mondesi at second and Mondesi at short, Merrifield at second, and Santana's been good at first base. He's actually their best infielder. Defensively, he's the best infielder they have. Move Dozier to right field. You've improved dramatically defensively. The Royals are the worst infield in baseball defensively. It's killing them. We've seen it at key times. It's killing them. And I don't need to tell you statistically that they're the worst, because we've watched them. And we've said, look at them kick the ball all over the place. Look at them make this play. Hey, listen, if you watch the games night in and night out and you listen to the announcers, they only show you the good plays, right? They show you that the Royals lost, but look how far Salvador Perez hit this home run. I love Salvi. And I love that he hit a home run farther than any home run he's hit in the StatCast era. That's fine. I like hearing that. That's good. But let's get real. The manager, who I like, Mike Matheny, I like him. I think he's the right guy for right now. I do. I like him. I'm good with Matheny. He's not running his pitchers out there right. And it may not work even if he does. The Royals are the classic team to have an opener. Somebody who pitches an inning or two, bring your starter in to face the bottom of the order, all right? Then work through the top and the bottom again. Then work through the top and the bottom again. And then decide whether you want him to go through the best hitters a third time through. I just think the Royals are complete candidates for this, and I don't even think they're considering it. Maybe they don't believe they have the personnel to have the openers like Tampa does, like Cleveland has done, like other teams have done, to pitch an inning or sometimes two innings. If they don't believe they have that personnel, then they don't have that personnel. But Singer, Lynch, Bubik, Coar, these guys should be up. They should be pitching. If it's not good enough, it's not good enough. But it isn't going to do the Royals any good. We've seen Cleveland's pitching now. We know what the White Sox have. Holland, Davis, and Santana aren't winning anything here for the Royals. They're not. And nobody thought this was some sort of a division-winning year or a playoff year. We all asked, you know, can the Royals win 75 games? Can they get to 500? Well, they got off to a great start. And I won't say it was smoke and mirrors because they won the games. They made the plays. The bullpen pitched well for an extended period of time. Salvador Perez got a lot of big hits. But the Royals aren't close, and they were exposed in this Cleveland series. The Twins beat the brains out of Royals pitchers last week, except for Duffy, and won 2 out of 3. This is going to be hard. And I don't – my point of all this is surprise us. You surprised us for a month, surprise me again. Because I don't believe in what I saw when they were winning. I believe in what I'm seeing while they're losing. And I know that's hard for you to hear, but it just looks more honest to me. The Royals playing poorly this last week and losing 5 in a row, 6 out of 7 or whatever it is. In the way that they've lost and watching those games, it looks to me more honest. It looked more real. It looks like that's what they are. They're going to have hot stretches. This is not a bad team. They're not going to lose 100 games. They've got a 5-game losing streak. I don't think it's going to be a 13-game losing streak. But you know what? It might be 8. They might not beat the White Sox. It's hard because the first 2 games just look impossible. Baseball's a funny game. You know, you can go out and hit the best pitcher and score 3 or 4 runs and get a nice night pitching, or the other team was, you know, partying the night before and they're tired or hungover, they've been traveling. Things can happen in baseball. The Royals can win one of these first 2 games, but this series looks awful for the Royals, and it's a 5-game losing streak already, and I guess my statement is surprise us again. The worst look for the Royals in that series against Cleveland wasn't the bad play. It was the fallout from Angel Hernandez, the manager, or the umpire, behind home plate. The Royals got Matheny, Eldred, and then Brady Singer kicked out of the game by this umpire. He's the worst umpire in baseball. Everybody knows it. Everybody's had trouble with him. He has sued Major League Baseball and lost because he was not getting World Series assignments. He does not grade well. Baseball is scared to death to fire him because they're afraid of another lawsuit that he'll, you know, basically at that point charge discrimination against him. They're afraid to death of this guy. There is no team in baseball that likes Angel Hernandez. When he's behind the plate, you know you're in for a long night. You don't poke him with a stick. You don't get into it. It's not going to help you. He's going to do a bad job. It's part of the game. The problem the Royals had is they all got kicked out and frustrated and lost their cool in that ball game with the lead. And I know it sounds like not much, but winning 1 out of 4 is completely different than getting swept 4 in a row. You would have lost 2 games on the entire season. You would have lost 2 games on the Indians instead of 4. If you just win 1 and you were ahead of them when the series started, you just lose 2 games to them instead of 4 just by winning 1. The Royals are cruising along, right? They're up 4-0. They're winning this game and they just flat out lose their cool from something that what happened the night before. Or, you know, was this problem that he had last year? I don't know what it was about. What I know is they all got ejected arguing a call that was a good call. It was a balk. You don't have to like the balk rules. You know, it was a toe tap by Singer before he spun and threw to second base to try to pick a batter off. It's often said you can't balk when going to second base. Well, you can with your footwork. You can't tap your toe and move and act like you're going to the plate and then do it. You can move toward the plate as long as your motion is fluid and then spend a second. You can do all those things. There's a lot you can do going to second base. And I don't like the rule because I see guys with nobody on base that tap their foot, that bring it up off the rubber, then put it back down, and it's never a balk on a pitch. It's only a balk on a pickoff. I think it's inconsistent. I think it's bad rules in baseball. But those are the rules, and that's the way the game is officiated. The Royals literally lost their cool and got ejected from a game over a good call because they were mad about a previous bad call. That's not a team that's focused. All right, that's a team going bad. That's a team that's looking around going, uh-oh, we're in trouble against these guys. We're not hitting these pitchers. We're not this. Maybe it was hubris. Maybe they got off to a good start. Maybe the Royals just thought they were better than they were. You know, they'd lost a game or two. But, hey, we got this lead. We're going to be fine. No lead is safe with the Royals. The bullpen is not good enough. No lead is safe. And, look, we can sit around as fans and blame an umpire all day long. And Angel Hernandez stinks. He's terrible at what he does. I don't know how they keep employing him. They're scared to death of him. He's got something. He's got some pictures or something. And it's every team in the league. This is not unique to the Royals. You have to deal with that. You have to deal with bad umpiring. You have to overcome it. You can't get ejected after good calls because you're mad about a previous bad call. You can't do that. You lose your cool, you lose the game. Wade Davis comes in, gives up a home run in the ninth inning, and the Royals lose again. You can't have it. You have to keep your cool. You have to overcome these things. But it's not good for the Royals. They got some real weaknesses. The bullpen's a weakness. The defense is brutal. They're a light hitting team, but they are, for all the light hitting the Royals do, they're pretty timely. They get runners on base. They've been drawing more walks. They've been doing some things. I'm optimistic about that. I think the Royals are going to win a lot of games this year against bad teams. They got Detroit coming back up. They're going to have more games against Detroit. They can win a couple or three there. But this weekend looks tough. This is the best team in the division. The White Sox are the team to beat. There's no doubt about it. And you'll see why the first two games of the series, when they throw Rodon and Lance Lynn out there against the Royals, the starting pitchers, who can go deep? They can just flat go deep into the game. And you know, it's a pretty rare thing to see one or two pitchers in a box score for a team. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if the next two nights, if the White Sox use their starting pitcher and combined in two games, maybe only three relievers. That wouldn't surprise me at all. At all. So we'll keep our eye on that. It's disappointing, but we probably got too excited too early. Wow, a really tragic story in sports. Everybody knows the name Sam Ellinger, not the writer for the Star, the quarterback at the University of Texas. Sam Ellinger was drafted in the sixth round by the Colts last week in the draft. On Thursday, they found Sam Ellinger's brother, Jake Ellinger, who also played football for Texas, younger brother, dead in his apartment in Austin, Texas. The police are saying they do not suspect any foul play. They're not saying how he died. This is a terrible tragedy. Sam Ellinger lost his brother, Jake, on Thursday. In 2013, Sam Ellinger, while a teenager in high school, right? Would have been 8 years ago, like 15 years old, 14 years old, lost his dad. His dad at age 46 died running a triathlon. And now Sam Ellinger has lost his brother, Jake. And they're not saying how. Jake was a very, 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 very smart kid. He had offers to go to Ivy League schools and play football and turned them down to go to Texas. He was not a great player. He didn't play a lot, but he was really smart. Made the dean's list, the all-conference honor roll, all those things. And we don't know exactly what happened, but that's a really, really sad young life to this point for Sam Ellinger, who was drafted last week. Must have been a thrill for him to get drafted in the sixth round by the Colts. And then tragedy strikes he and his family again. His brother Jake has died, and he died in his apartment on Thursday. What a sad, sad thing going on with that family. Sam Ellinger has lost his dad and his brother in just a few short years and is just beginning his life. That's a very sad and tragic situation. The situation in Green Bay with quarterback Aaron Rodgers is neither sad nor tragic. I mean, the world belongs to Aaron Rodgers. We sit here and treat this story with Aaron Rodgers like this is just, oh, it's so terrible. They can't get it. Look, this is, I always like to say sports isn't the real world. And politics is the same way. It's people just grifting millions and millions and millions of dollars and sometimes billions of dollars for their own gain, and everybody's out for themselves and there's no loyalty and there's all these things, right? And it's coming down the road. I said it when he first started playing quarterback. In 7 or 8 years, Patrick Mahomes will not be the affable young man that you know that he is today. All right, there are lots of speed bumps. There is a rocky road down the road for Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. It's coming. You got to wait it out because it happens with every star player. That's how Peyton Manning winds up in Denver. That's how Tom Brady is in Tampa. And there was unrest there and tension clearly between he and Belichick the last few years. Each one trying to figure out, how do I make it look like I get all the credit for all these Super Bowls? That's what was going on in New England. Joe Montana finished his career in Kansas City. There is unrest coming in Kansas City. Russell Wilson has had a bumpy offseason with Seattle. Aaron Rodgers is doing this with Green Bay. As sure as there are true franchise quarterbacks, elite quarterbacks, there is a bumpy road. It's coming. It's going to be ugly in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes. Mark my word. This will not be some 20-year, smoothly paved, fresh asphalt road where everybody just rides on a 72-degree sunny day with no wind and no bugs in their shield. It's good. You know, that's not what this is going to be. It's going to get bouncy. And it's bouncy in Green Bay right now. And it's sad that it's going to happen here, but it will. Because what happens, in my opinion, is what Patrick Mahomes' first 3 years in the NFL is good with, and they're treating him exceptionally. They forget that when they're 30. The egos become so tremendous with these quarterbacks. They become Superman. They become invincible. They have to one-up the other guy. They have to be recognized. They become spoiled, conceited, arrogant, all these things. It will be a shocker if that doesn't happen to Patrick Mahomes. There are exceptions. Drew Brees, by and large, was an exception to that. By and large. And he handled some stuff late in his career that most quarterbacks won't happen. Drew Brees, the exception. Allowed his coach to pull him out, throw another guy in the game, run the football, or throw it occasionally, because Drew Brees was older and they needed a different set in there and a different look offensively, and he clearly wasn't the player this last year that he had been throughout his career. And he allowed that, and he took it like a man, and he understood it was for team. Those guys are incredibly rare. You can't find those guys. Philip Rivers never won anything, but was always about Philip Rivers. And I like Philip Rivers, the guy. I just, you know, you can see this. It's what quarterbacks are. But you won't find very many Drew Brees out there. There aren't very many Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and Drew Brees certainly is, that, well, and he's on his second team. He got traded because the Chargers didn't believe in him, but he had an unbelievable career. He was clearly paired up with the right coach, the right system. They did the right things through the years for him. I think he recognized that. He stood by that. He's what we all think we want to be, that we want to be that team guy, that I'm not going to be the squeaky wheel, that I'm going to be that guy. And as this was all happening the last couple of years, and he was getting yanked off the field on 3rd and 1, I didn't hear a lot of complaints. I didn't see some tension or fight. And he stayed with his team. He didn't demand a trade to go somewhere else or anything like that. He's been committed to his community. There's a lot to love about Drew Brees. That's probably the best part. That just doesn't happen with most quarterbacks. 90-some percent of them don't do that. The Packers are going through this with Aaron Rodgers right now, and it's probably coming with Patrick Mahomes at some point when he's in his 30s. But Rodgers, it's now reported, has been offered the largest contract in the NFL, more money than Patrick Mahomes. What is not known is how long the contract is. So there is no good guy or bad guy in any of this. Aaron Rodgers is being a spoiled brat. The Packers are digging in, saying, we don't need you. We have Jordan Love. We drafted a guy that we'll go with if we have to. And we've offered you more money than anybody else in football. Don't be a baby. So it's an ego contest between the GM and Rodgers and the organization, all this stuff. It's just egos lining up and battling it out. I don't know how it's going to end, but hearing that he was offered more money than Mahomes should tell you all you need to know. All right? It really should. Maybe he is eccentric. Maybe he will retire. Maybe he'll walk away and believes he's in the Hall of Fame today. Maybe he'll host Jeopardy, which pays millions. I don't know what's going to happen with Aaron Rodgers, but it's very typical. There's nothing unusual about this. This happens all the time in the NFL with elite quarterbacks. and we'll watch and see how it unfolds. My guess is they offered him more money per year than Patrick Mahomes, but they probably offered more money per year on a very short deal, or only a year or two guaranteed that they would move on to their next quarterback. Maybe a trade is the best thing. Let's not trade Aaron Rodgers into the AFC West. And I know we all love the Chiefs, and we all think they'll be the favorites, and they'll all be this and all be that. Let's not trade him in. Let's keep him out of this division. That dude is a baller. That guy can play. That's the most accurate thrower in the league. His lofted passes and deep balls are insanely accurate. The touch he displays on those throws is unlike any other quarterback in the league. I do not want him in the AFC West. I don't. I'm not saying, as a Chiefs guy, you know, we look at the Chiefs, you're not afraid of anybody. You're like, let's just go beat anybody. We can go do that. Okay, yeah, the Chiefs are going to be good no matter what. Just keep him out of this division. I like the division the way it is. You know, Denver doesn't have a quarterback. The Raiders guy, we know what that's all about. You know, the Chargers, do they become something they haven't been with their new guy? Maybe, maybe. I'm not saying the Chiefs can't lose games in their division. I'm not saying they're just going to win the division every year that Patrick Mahomes is a quarterback. But for crying out loud, let's keep Aaron Rodgers out of this thing. It makes it better for all of us. At KKHI, brought to you by Joslyn's Jewelry. You're running out of time, boys. Mother's Day is Sunday. You better get into Joslyn's this weekend and make her happy. 95th and Antioch, online at joslynsjewelry.com. Fry Orthodontics, 12 locations for your convenience. First appointment's free if you mention the podcast. Online at fryorthodontics.com or call 469-9191. Free retainers for life for your kids if they go the route of braces. Well, really, or anything. Invisalign is the same price as braces. Invisalign's an excellent option. It's fewer appointments, less time missed from school or work, less pain involved, and better hygiene. You're going to like it. Invisalign is now the same price as braces, only at Fry Orthodontics. And Buck Roofing and Construction, online at rbuckroofing.com. You'll sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. If you call 913-384-2680 and get the free roof inspection right now by calling Buck Roofing. Okay, so I know I talk a lot about the name change at my high school. They've gone away from Indians. And you've heard my argument for why I think Bison is just as bad, if not worse, than Indians. I just want to share with you a couple of emails that I fired off yesterday, and I'll read them in order. The first email I sent in regards to this was after reading a story in the Kansas City Star, and it wasn't an opinion piece. It was just a straight story, but even their straight stories are written like, this was written like a cheerleader, okay? They were thrilled at the Kansas City Star that Shawnee Mission North, okay, this is like, that's Johnson County, Kansas. That's white people country, and look at this progress. They're taking Indian off the name of their high school. And I'm going to read you the short letter that I sent to Sarah Ritter, who wrote the story. It was a fine story. Mike Fannin, the editor of the Kansas City Star, and Greg Farmer, who's the assistant editor of the Kansas City Star. And I have not, for full disclosure, I've got a couple emails here I'm going to read for you to people that I sent, and I'll tell you who I sent them to. I've not heard back from any of them yet. We're close to 24 hours as I read these to you. It's been 24 hours. Sarah, thank you for your fine story on the name change at Shawnee Mission North. If you're interested in a follow-up with opinions from others, here's a sample of mine. In 1870, there were 10 million bison across the plains of the Midwestern United States. Not a single thing is more associated with the cultural and financial downfall of indigenous people than white Americans slaughtering all these animals, and over the course of 18 years, reducing the population to just 500 wild bison. It was also devastating to the health of indigenous people, led to tens of thousands of deaths, and completely changed who they became. A study reported at InsideScience.org concludes in just one generation, the height of the average indigenous person was reduced by more than an inch, and the children born after the slaughter were on average 2 inches shorter than their parents. While arguable, it's hardly controversial to say white people slaughtering 10 million bison was the worst thing that ever happened to these people. Referring to them as Indians was a mistake from the start, as they clearly were not from India. But the bison slaughter is a much, much more painful part of their history than being misnamed by strangers. I believe the school should strongly reconsider this name, as it represents the most devastating bias against indigenous people this land has ever seen. I signed it, Kevin Keatsman, Shawnee Mission North, class of 1982, host of KK Has Issues, Crooked Tail Media, with my phone number for them to call. I then followed up and forwarded the email that I had written to the Star to Dr. Michael Fulton, the superintendent of the Shawnee Mission School District, and Dr. Jeremy Higgins, the principal at Shawnee Mission North. Dr. Fulton and Dr. Higgins, below is a copy of the email I sent to the Kansas City Star after reading about the mascot name change at my high school. I believe the new name is an even bigger insult regarding the destruction of our indigenous people and a painful reminder of what happened to them. I'm surprised some history teachers in your school district did not alert you to the correlation between whites slaughtering bison and the downfall of indigenous people. It's the biggest injustice they ever faced. Please reconsider this name, which is a terrible reminder of the most devastating thing that ever happened to their way of life. I'd also like to know your plans to rename your school district. The Shawnee Indian Mission is believed by many to have been founded by racists, and our local post office and your district have cleverly omitted Indian from the full name of the Shawnee Indian Mission. It was re-education of young indigenous people to act, speak, think, and live like white people. How terribly offensive if we really want to be honest. The school district, the postal code, several communities and street names must immediately be reconsidered, or your actions in changing a mascot are as shallow and patronizing as could possibly be to indigenous people everywhere. I look forward to your response. Signed, Kevin Keatsman, Class of 82, host, Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, Crooked Tail Media, Inc. Then I took that letter and a very small note back to Sarah Ritter, Mike Fannin, and Greg Farmer of the Star and said, oh, I also sent this to the principal and superintendent of the school district. I'm sure you will agree I make some excellent points, especially that changing a minor thing like a mascot is patronizing to indigenous people, to say the least. And we need to consider changing the name of this school district. So you know my point in all this. My point in all this is we shouldn't be changing any of this. But my strong point is if we're going to take Indian away, and I'm not, this is not a hill I'm dying on, folks. I don't care. I'm not some sort of freak that's associated with Shawnee Mission North Indians, and I can't believe that they're changing this, and I'm so hurt. No, that's not me. My point is it's patronizing. It's insignificant. It's shallow. It's like everything the Democrats do. It's theater. They want to feel better about themselves because they got something changed. Then they use terms like meaningful change or real change or systemic change. Okay, if this is what we're going to do, I'm dead serious. I will turn into a liberal on this cause. And I think it'll be fun. I'm just going to go be an activist and say, we got to change all these names. I grew up in Mission, Kansas. The Mission was founded by a racist. It was about re-educating indigenous people and turning them white. What's more racist than that? In 2021 language, I'm not talking about then, I'm talking about now. If all we're going to do is sit here on some high horse in 2021 and say, wow, we were such bad people 150 years ago, you know, or all this other stuff. If that's what we're going to do it. Let's get rid of everything. Change the name of Shawnee Mission Parkway. Let's change the name of the school district. Mission, Kansas can't stand. We're really going to honor Shawnee, Kansas by naming it after Native Americans that were slaughtered? That's what we're going to do? I'll be a liberal. I can do this. I can play this game all day long. And while I will probably not get a response from any of the people I sent this to, they know my point. They understand my point, and they know I'm right. They know that changing a mascot is weak. It's shallow. It's patronizing. It's insignificant. It means nothing. It's just some print on a piece of paper and a story on a newscast. It does nothing for the cause. It does nothing to change anything. It's pathetic is what it is. They're coming after the Chiefs. That's coming. They're coming after the Chiefs. They will. And someday the Chiefs won't be the Chiefs. I promise you, someday the Chiefs won't be the Chiefs. But my point of all this is, do the real thing. Change everything. You're literally taking away Indians from Shawnee Mission North, but you're keeping Shawnee Mission. There's a word missing between Shawnee and Mission. It's Indian. You understand? It was a mission. It was a religious mission. It was a religious pastor and his family. They set up a mission in Kansas City, where we now know is roughly Fairway. They set up a mission to re-educate indigenous people and turn them into white people. That's what it was about. We're going to teach them Christianity. We're going to teach them English. We're going to teach them how to farm the land. We're going to do all these different things culturally and change who and what they are. It was the Shawnee Indian mission. And the people who started it were wildly believed to be racist against blacks. I mean, this is what we're celebrating with the name Shawnee Mission School District. And I mean this. They've cleverly omitted Indian because Indian belongs in the name. There was no such thing as the Shawnee Mission. It was the Shawnee Indian Mission. That was the name. The name of the game was to have this missionary group change the Indians. We're going to change the Indians. It was the Shawnee Indian. That was the name of the tribe. They were the Shawnee Tribe Indian Mission. It's all the same. These people are crazy. They're crazy. Again, I don't care that they took Indians away from my high school. But if we're going to do this, do it for real. Get rid of everything with any indigenous people names on it. Get rid of it all. If they're offended by being named or honored by their tribes or anything that's happened, rid yourself of all of it, especially some Indian mission. There's a golf course right by the Shawnee Indian Mission called Indian Hills. What are we going to do with that? Does Indian Hills Golf stand? This is some of the richest people in the city. Country clubbers, baby. There's some old school money in that joint. Whoa, that's a whitey fest. Oh, Indian Hills now. What are we going to do with Indian Hills? You'll change it? Where do you stop? This is absurd, and they know my game. They know my emails. But if I didn't put my name on it, and I just said, signed a concerned citizen, these would all read like somebody who's uber-liberal and has indigenous ancestry, which I probably do, to be honest. I've never done the DNA test. I don't want to know. I don't care about my heritage much. I know my parents. I don't care that much. My family's been here a long time. Me and my sister and my dad were really dark skinned for Germans. That's all I can tell you. I'm much darker skinned than most Germans. I'm not some blue eye, blonde hair. That's not me. So I don't know where it came from. I don't want to know. There's tons of people who say, well, there's something in my ancestry here. It happened somewhere. I could be. I'd be interesting. Maybe I should take the DNA test and find out if I have indigenous in me and totally go nuts on this thing. Because if you just read these if Charisse Davids wrote these and sent these to the Star, it'd make a lot of sense. We'd think she's crazy, but it would make a lot of sense. She'd be saying, if you're going to take Indian off that, let's not stop there. We got a lot of work to do here. And that was my point. Now I signed my name on it. They know I'm conservative. They know that I'm up to no good by sending this, that I'm poking them with a stick. They know that. I'm not serious. I don't want all these names changed. But I do believe if you're going to be fair and consistent, if you're taking a stupid name off a mask out of a high school, you better look at the name of your district when you're the Shawnee Mission School District. I mean, what is more hypocritical and stupid from the left than that? I'll let you know if they send anything to me. I'm not holding out any hope that anybody is emailing me back, but I guess we will see. Mark H. is a listener. He sent me a great email. He sent me an email from an ABC television station in Oregon notifying me that this has happened in the state of Oregon. Oregon has become apparently the first place to indefinitely say masks are part of life. They had an extension of a mandate that lasted 180 days, and by law, an extension of a mandate cannot go past 180 days. So they did not extend it. They merely said it's in place indefinitely. Now, this is not the House of Representatives or the Senate in Oregon passing a new law. That's not what this is. This is a power grab, and they're saying it's in place in the workplace. Masks will be worn indefinitely, and social distancing remains in place. 70,000 people have already signed a petition in Oregon against this. They're going to get put on notice at the State House. They'll have to have a vote. This is not a law. This is overreach. This is the worst ever. And Oregon has just said, we don't see a day that we're not wearing masks or spacing in the workplace. Oregon. Thank you, Mark, for sending that in. I appreciate that. A lot of you are emailing or contacting me about the audit going on in Arizona. Arizona, it is just impossible to believe that Biden won the state of Arizona. It was very close. I think it was just a few thousand votes. It is impossible to believe. Irregularities happened there. Polls were closed. Ballots were dumped. We saw weird stuff happen in Maricopa County, which is Phoenix. Maricopa County, the entire Phoenix metro area, it's not like here. It's not a bunch of smaller counties. Maricopa is it. It's ginormous county. And so, you know, we're talking about like 4 million people. It's a huge city. Phoenix is a massive city. And so I'm not saying it's easy to pull off elections, but clearly it looked like something went wrong there. So the state government is Republican. The state Congress, the state representatives, the state Senate, the governor, they're all Republicans. It's a Republican state. It's been reliably Republican for a long, long time. And the more that immigration became an issue, the more Republican it got. Because they're like, we can't do this. We can't have these. There's crime coming in. There's bad things happening here on the border. And then we saw the result of this election. So in Arizona, the Republicans, by law, through the state government, and a court, the Democrats fought it. And it went to a court and a judge upheld it, said they have every right to do this. They decided to do a forensic audit. It's going to take a couple months. It's been going on, I think, for about 3 weeks now. Hundreds of thousands of ballots have been studied. They have every ballot that was sent in. They're putting them under ultraviolet lights. They're looking for watermarks on the ballots to make sure they're real. They're looking for creases. They're looking to match signatures. They're doing all the things that you would do in any fair and free election. The Democrats initially said they can do all they want. The thing's legit. It's good. Whatever. Then the count started, and now they've been going and going and going, and the Democrats are all over this, and Biden is all over it. He says he's going to send the Department of Justice in and try to shut it down. The Democrats want to shut it down. I've stayed away from this topic a lot on this podcast because I'm waiting for the result, because it's going to take 2 months. It's not something we can talk about every week, but the question is, why are so many of the most powerful Democrat machine operatives in America now in Maricopa County trying to stop this audit, where there are plenty of Democrats in the room that get to watch, and not a one of them to this point has said they've seen anything dishonest in the recount? So you have Arizona Democrats watching this every day, no complaints to this point, but here comes Biden, Department of Justice, and a bunch of heavy hitters coming in saying, this is foul play. This needs to be stopped. It needs to be stopped immediately. Well, they clearly know this is about to overturn. Well, it won't overturn. The vote has been certified in Arizona. They cannot overturn it. What they can do is find fraud and display for the entire country how it was done. This is a forensic audit, which means there'll be a report at the end of exactly what happened. Was it non-signature ballots? Was it ballots without watermark? Did they reproduce them? Were they, fake ballots that people printed and made? We're going to learn a lot here. We're going to learn a lot. So we'll keep our eye on that. All you got to know is it's taking place. It looks like the result of this is going to be that Trump won Arizona. That's what everybody's thinking, because the Democrats are losing their minds over this thing. And they're sending in the heavy hitters to try to stop it. And I suspect they're going to try to go to a federal court and stop it, which is absurd. I don't know how you can do that. Brian Stelter's an anchor at ESPN. I don't watch the guy. I don't really know him. I know who he is, and he's a bomb thrower. He's a liberal bomb thrower. He's got no ratings. He's tanked. He's a favorite of management, and he spews the filth, and so everything's good. But he has no ratings to speak of. His ratings went up. His ratings have gone up, and it alerted a bunch of people in conservative media to go, whoa, what's going on here? Democrat ratings are not up. Nobody's enthused about Joe Biden. Their ratings were better when they bashed Trump all day. Ratings are down with liberal media. What's going on here? Brian Stelter's numbers were up. What's this show called? I don't even know what his show's called. And then it was learned, and now very beautifully reported and fun, Brian Stelter's ratings went up the week he went on vacation. In my industry, that's unheard of. That's unheard of. You don't go on vacation and the numbers go up. They're like, oh, that guy's gone. I'll watch. It happened. His ratings have been in the tank. They literally went up the week he's on vacation. He left for a week and the numbers went up. That's not good. I always felt like I liked having fill-in hosts. And early on, when they were very young, I don't think they'll get mad at me for saying this, Todd Lebo and Stephen St. John would fill in, and it was just potty humor. It was like eighth graders in a locker room potty humor. And I would be like, guys, dudes, come on. That's not what this show is. But it's what they were. They were a little bit younger than me. I was, you know, 34 or something. They were in their 20s. And it was just potty humor. I said, no, my audience, no, no. And I got them out of that. And then I basically found a way to do fill-in hosts and whatnot. And then Danny joined the team. And when he was there, he did a different style show than I did. You never really wanted to leave for a week and have people say, boy, we're glad you're gone. And I never experienced that. When I was gone, people missed me, and it was very nice of them to say that. Rush Limbaugh had the greatest philosophy of all time. He would bring in Mark Stein with an English accent, and I like doing that too. I was like, I'd like to bring females in, if I can get somebody with an accent, something that sounds totally different, but, you know, isn't what they're accustomed to. That's always a good idea. Rush Limbaugh never tried to put a replacement on that people were going to go, boy, that was nice for a week. But Brian Stelter apparently didn't learn that because his replacement got better ratings than he did. And a company called Applied Biology Incorporated in California has done a study of COVID-19 and who it affects most. And they have learned that bald men are twice as likely to have severe COVID or difficult COVID. Bald men are missing whatever, andro something. Not if you start growing bald in your 40s or 50s, it's no big deal. Right? It doesn't say anything about you. It happens for a reason. It's genetic. Now they're saying after a massive study that if you are a man and you're balding, you are twice as likely to have a difficult COVID situation than someone who is not. We're learning more and more every day as we go. Right? We are. We don't know. Who knew? Twice as likely bald. They believe, through their research, this should be applied in hospitals and critical care units. If you're going to admit somebody to the hospital with COVID, that it should be a factor. Like they ask you questions before any, you know, you're sick and they ask you, do you smoke? Do you know? And you ask all these different questions. Is there cancer in your family? Is there heart disease or liver failure? All these questions you get, that for COVID admission into the hospital, one of the questions should be, are you bald? Are you losing your hair? They believe that. We just learn as we go. That's what it's all about, man. That's what it's all about. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for spreading the word. So many of you are telling others about Kevin Kietzman Has Issues. And thank you for hitting the like, follow, subscribe button wherever you listen. It makes a huge difference. We got a great weekend coming up. You're going to come into contact with other folks. We're getting out and about. We're getting back to work. Spread the word, if you can, about Kevin Kietzman Has Issues. I think a lot of folks will like it if they know it's here. It's the opposite, basically, of everything else in Kansas City media. That's all you got to know. There just aren't any conservatives out there. The ones that are don't say they are. And they play it down the middle of the road and they work in the shadows of the offices they're in. It's a difficult situation for them. There's certainly no conservatives in sports talk radio. So if you want your sports talk and all the politics in one place, this is one-stop shopping, and just describe it to your friends that way. Hopefully they will like it. And if you're listening right now, I know that you do. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening to Kevin Kietzman Has Issues. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Kietzman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.
This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.